I actually have a title for this talk. I don't usually think about that, but my title is, What is Zazen? And I want to start, though, back up a little bit. You know, I am acutely aware that this is a difficult time in this country and in the world. And I've spoken about such things various places many, many, many times, I'm sorry to say. And it seems to me it's also really useful and important to go back to the basics every so often. What is Zazen? And I want to leave some time at the end for talking or for questions. So if you want to ask me what's the point in these times, feel free. But it's not what I'm going to talk about. I don't think it needs justification, frankly. So Zazen, seated meditation, our form of meditation in Soto Zen, I'd say Dogen's form of meditation. Is there anybody here who does not know who Dogen was? Don't be shy if you don't know. It's always, you got to start somewhere. All right. So Dogen's form of meditation. And the term we often use for it is shikantaza, just sitting, simply sitting. So that's what Zazen is. It's just sitting. Which it sounds so easy, and it's so difficult, and it's so easy. It means just that. It means simply sitting. Sit down, get quiet, pay attention, that's it. Be there for whatever comes up. Don't push it away. Don't invite it in for tea. Be aware of your body. Be aware of your breath. Just sitting. And what you're exactly not doing is trying to wake up, trying to be enlightened. I love telling this story. There's a woman from the Vallejo Sangha, Kate Flores, who tells this story on herself, so it's okay. She's a very senior person there. She's received lay entrustment from me and so on and so on. But she says, you know, when she first came, her life was very difficult. She was getting divorced and some of her family died and blah, blah, blah. It was a rough time. So she heard about this Zen stuff. So she decided to come, and her idea was she'd come for about 3 months, and then she'd get enlightened, and then her life would be perfect. That was 20 years ago. And she still sits Zazen. And her understanding has much deepened. We do make an effort when we sit Zazen. We make a great effort. However, the effort is to sit up straight. The effort is to know where the breath is. The effort is to let go of thinking, to not get on the train of thought. To not get pulled off our seat by our emotions. And that's easy to say. It's not always easy to do. Sometimes it's really hard. It's hard to let go. And you notice I didn't say but. And that is our effort over and over and over again. One of the things that sometimes is boring. Another is sometimes it feels like slogging through mud or being in molasses, and you sit down and you cross your legs, you do however you sit down, and you pay attention to your breath and you sort of straighten your posture like that, and your mind goes off and you bring it back, and your mind goes off and you bring it back, and you spend 40 minutes or a whole day in a day-long retreat. It just seems like you spend the whole time coming back, pulling yourself back, letting go. Don't push it away. Do not try to be blank. It's not about being blank. It's about just being there with whatever comes up, but not being pulled around by it, not engaging with it, not getting caught by it. It's just another thought, or just another physical sensation of fear or anger or whatever it might be. And that, I sometimes think, I do think, that that's practice. In other words, you're practicing letting go. You're practicing not getting entangled with your thoughts and your emotions and your physical sensations. Not that they're not there, but you don't get hooked. And that's what we're practicing when we practice Zazen. And we fail over and over again. So fine, whoop-de-doo. Just come back to your breath and your body and let it go. I had a friend, he was the first Shuso, Gary McNabb. My first practice period was 6 weeks, I think, at Green Gulch Farm in the summer of 1989. And Gary was a Shuso, the head student. And Gary said that when he noticed that he was thinking, sometimes he said, I go, excuse me, and I come back. You don't need to do that. But sometimes it's helpful to just sort of remind yourself that you want to say, excuse me, I'm busy here. I'm busy doing nothing. And that practice of letting go is exactly the practice of our lives, right? You get upset in your daily life, you get angry, you get hurt, you get turned on. And the practice of not getting hooked, not getting entangled, is available. And we say, you know, that you always do Zazen, not just on the cushion. Zazen is life. So shikantaza, just sitting or simply sitting. So we make that effort to sit up straight and so on. And we make an effort, I guess you could say, to not do. Another way of talking about it, this I love, I don't know, there's a wonderful teacher, a Japanese teacher who came here quite a few years ago and has lived here since, I guess, the 90s, and he used to visit before that. His name is Okamura, Shohaku Okamura, and he's lectured about especially Dogen a lot, and he's a founding abbot of the, is it Bloomington? Indiana Zen temple, I guess. And his teacher was Uchiyama Roshi, another wonderful teacher, and you may have read some of Uchiyama's books, like Refining Your Life from the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment, or Opening the Hand of Thought. And Uchiyama was the teacher at Antaiji in Japan, and its founding teacher was his teacher, a man named Sawaki Kodo Roshi. And I'm going to digress a little bit just because one of I was transmitted, and my main teacher was Mel Weitzman, Sogen Roshi. But I also had a major teaching relationship with Shunbo Blanche Hartman Roshi. I say she was my formation master, which that's not a term that we use, but in Christian monasteries where people are learning how to be a Christian minister or whatever, they have somebody called a formation master, who's the one that teaches them the ropes and teaches them the rules and what to do and not to do and how to do things. Blanche taught me, one of the things she taught me was you never eat when you're wearing your okesa, your formal robe, unless you're eating in the zendo. But otherwise, after a ceremony or something, you always go, before you have something to eat at the reception, you go and you take off your okesa and you just put on your roksu. That's the kind of thing. I won't go on and on about it. But she was a first female abbot of the San Francisco Zen Center, and she was based at that time at the city center, and that's where I was living. And she loved Antaiji way of practice. Antaiji is not a usual kind of training temple in Japan. They didn't do any chanting. They didn't do much formal practice at all. And they certainly didn't do memorial ceremonies at the drop of a hat, which a lot of temples in Japan make their living that way. And people come and they give a donation, and the monks chant for their kid to do well on the university exams, or they do memorial services and so on. That doesn't happen on Antaiji. It's just really about zazen. And they would have a five-day sesshin, I think it was five, once a month. And they call them, that's called a sesshin without toys. And it probably goes, I mean, the classic one at San Francisco Zen Center is 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. But these probably went longer than that. I don't know. But at any rate, there was no Dharma talk. There was no Doksan or practice discussion, no formal interviews. There was just zazen. It was no service. And we started doing that. And we did some at Clearwater, I think. But at any rate, it turned out it's extremely powerful. I was terrified. I thought, how can I do that? especially at City Center, they actually have there's a Zendo, and then there's a separate Buddha hall where you go for morning service, which means you get to take a walk. You get to walk upstairs. And I don't know about you, but Todd and I were overlapped there anyway. But for me, that was always a wonderful break. It's like, yes. And then you get to come back downstairs for the meal and all. And so it was exercise, and it was a distraction. And you'd have the service. And then you could go and have, you know, individual discussions with the teachers. But none of that. The only thing was, instead of morning service, you just did bowing practice, because it's still for the servers to go up and get the food from the kitchen and bring it down and get it organized and all. Something had to happen. So we did bowing. And the first day I learned that you don't just keep bowing over and over again as fast as you can. I couldn't hardly walk the next day. But at any rate, that level of devotion to zazen is wonderful, and it turned out it was a really deep and great experience. You know, I remember being afraid and thinking, I can't do that. I can't do that. I'm going to go crazy. And it turned out to be just wonderful. You know, I'm not sure where this fits in, so I'll just say it here. We make it hard on ourselves when we resist the zazen. And maybe that's another way to not do shikantaza. And it's so easy to get yourself worked up and worry about it, and that I can't do this. And then it turns out that it can become really hard. A friend of mine was Shuso, head student for a practice period at Tassajara, a woman named Barbara Cohn, and she was nervous about it, and she was going to be in the springtime. And in the fall, she was worrying, but by the time it got to the point of the 7-day sesshin that ended the fall practice period, and Sojin led that one, at any rate, by that time she had worked through her resistance. She was one of those people that always had a significant amount of pain in a sesshin. She had no pain at all. And she asked, he talked to Mel about it and Sojin about it, and he said, you weren't resisting. So that was a powerful lesson for her and for me, because she told me about it. So we can, I started to say we can choose to make it difficult for ourselves. I think that's kind of a judgy word, because I know when I am making it harder for myself because of my resistance, I'm not consciously doing it on purpose. You know, I know better. I know I'm making it harder for myself. I don't want to do that. I wish I weren't doing it, and I do it. And we all do it. But shikantaza is sitting down in the middle of that, giving it breath. And if there is a knot in your belly or in your sort of your solar plexus, wherever you hold your fear or whatever, you know, giving that breath, not denying it, just breathe into it. Don't get entangled with it. Don't argue with it. That's something we all do. That's really stupid. Don't be upset. Well, thanks. I told a friend that I had fallen recently in the sand out at Point Reyes, and his first response was, "Don't fall." Oh, thank you. I didn't know that. I think a sense of humor helps too. You know, to remember that you're just another jerk. This is how I talk to myself. Anyway. I'm just another neurotic person. I'm not so special. That makes it, for me, it makes it easier for me to let go. Don't take yourself so seriously. Who do you think you are? So shikantaza, just sitting, simply sitting. And every so often, there is quiet. Every so often, there's ease in sitting. And don't hang on to that either. But there is that. There is joy in sitting. But you can't sit in order to anything. You certainly cannot. I mean, you can, but then you're just torturing yourself. If you sit in order to get enlightened, I will be enlightened. No. I think it's a really useful story. I'm taking a seminar online with Kokyo Henkel. He was wonderful. I hope that you all get a chance to sit with him. He's my little brother. He started Tassajara one practice period after I did, and we sewed our first okesas together in that courtyard. And he was kitchen crew when I was Tenzo, and I taught him how to cook. He might dispute that a little, but I think so. But now he is a major scholar and a wonderful teacher. And so with him, I'm studying, we're reading a book about the school of Buddhism called Yogacara, sometimes called Mind Only. And he told a story the other day. No, it's fading away. Don't ever get old. It was such a great story. It's a really good story.
Don't fall either.
What? Yeah, don't fall either. Thank you. Well, if it comes back to me, I'll tell you. So the next way I want to talk about Zazen is the way that Sawaki Kodo described it, and Uchiyama and Okamura both use this phrase, that Zazen is good for nothing. It's good for nothing. And it's a wonderful phrase, right? Because it is good for nothing. You don't get anything out of it. Oh, that's it. That's it. You don't get anything out of it. This Tibetan to-be master, somebody, anyway, he wanted to meet Maitreya of future birth, right? He wanted to meet him. And so he did an individual retreat for like 3 years, and he just sat, meditated really hard on Manjushri. Not Manjushri, on Maitreya. And he didn't meet Maitreya. And he left. He decided, well, this isn't working, so he left. And then he saw somebody who was doing something in the world, like taking care of horses or planting or something. And that person was totally dedicated to what they... Oh, they were doing something ridiculous. This guy was polishing a piece of metal with a cloth in order to make it into a knife. So he decided, well, if that person can be that dedicated, I can keep going. So he goes back and he does another 3 years. And he gives up. And then he goes out and he runs into somebody who's doing something equally kind of silly. And he decides, oh, I just haven't been dedicated enough. I must be single-minded. And he goes back another 3 years and it's still not working. And finally, after I think 9 years of this, he decides, well, I'm not going to get there. So he kind of packs up and he leaves and he goes out and he's walking along the road and he sees a dog, diseased dog, lying by the side of the road. And he pities the dog, and he sees that it's got an open wound, and it's covered with maggots. And he knows that he can't, you know, that if he tries to brush them off with his hand, he'll hurt the dog. So he takes his tongue and goes to lift them off with his tongue. And as soon as he starts to do that, the dog becomes Maitreya and says, I've been with you all along. And I will teach you now. I'll work with you now. So, you know, as soon as he gave up, And as soon as his, as he met what was in front of him rather than what he wanted to have, things changed. And he picked up the dog, he was carrying the dog, and I was carrying Maitreya. You know, and as he was walking through the village, people were saying, "Why are you carrying that dog?" Because they couldn't see it, Maitreya. But that just seems like to me a great story about no gaining idea, not trying to get something. You know, don't polish a tile in order to make a Buddha. That's a part of a famous koan. So it's good for nothing. It's good for letting go of anything. And I would say also it's good for no thing. We tend to make something solid out of what we want, out of what we see, out of what we experience. We grab onto it, we put labels on it, and we make it into a thing. There's a sort of a fancy word, we reify it. We concretize it. We concretize our experience, and we make it into a thing. Stop it. Don't do that. Again, it's easy to say. And to some extent, we must do it. Right? Every time that I open my mouth and choose this word as opposed to that word, I'm making a choice and I'm kind of making a thing out of it. And I have to. I have to choose and define words and use words and use, there's a clock here at my request because I find it easier to, rather than looking at my watch, but you wouldn't even know that I was looking at it. So it's not, because it's distracting if the lecturer looks at their watch. But we thingify, and we do it in Zazen, we do it all the time. And to some extent, we have to do it. This is, I'm going to go through the whole thing, but you know, we all agree that this is a lectern. I think we agree on that. But I see my idea of a lectern, and you see your idea of a lectern. In other words, your vision, your understanding and the way you see this is colored by all of your own experience with lecterns. And that's okay. It has to be. But those of you studying the Heart Sutra know that this event here is not really solid. It's not, it doesn't have a separate concrete existence. Right? This is a dynamic energy, say. But it looks like a lectern to me, and I wouldn't want to stub my toe on it. You know, I get to say, oh, it's empty of own being. Well, yeah, but don't walk into it. But to remember that, to remember how we, you know, I think I know what a lectern is. This is a lectern. And I see my lectern. And I attach to my idea of a lectern and I concretize it. And we do that, I think, in our zazen, in our minds, in our zazen, when it's not flowing, when it's not fluid. We make our opinions solid. Is that okay to say that? We grab onto them so hard. And it's easy to do that. We do it all the time, but in Zazen, it's a little easier, I think, to notice when you're doing it, to notice when you're holding on to some idea that you have. and that you are perhaps even obsessing about something or someone. You're making a thing of it. And the more labels we slap onto whatever it is, and the more we believe in the labels that we slap on, then the more that labeling gets in the way, it makes whatever it is harder and harder and harder. It makes our experience of the, you know, it could be a sensation, it could be a thought, it could be almost anything. No, it could be anything. You know, it just makes it harder to see. It's harder to see the fluidity of what's going on. I can't resist. It becomes, I will go back and explain, but it becomes a dead parrot. So who knows? Who the Monty Python fans are. If you put in dead parrot, that skit will show up. You don't have to put Monty Python. You don't have to put anything, just dead parrot. And I'm not going to go on and on about it, much as I love it. Google it and enjoy it. But the parrot is, John Cleese bought a parrot and he's returning it because it's dead. And I always think of that's what we do to our experience. We kill it, and it gets to the point. You know, Cleese gets more and more upset. That's his shtick, right? And he's going nuts. And the guy's saying, "Oh no, it's just asleep." And eventually, he takes it out of the cage, on which its feet have been nailed to the perch. He takes it out of the cage, and he's hitting it on the counter. He says, "This is an ex-parrot. This is an extinct parrot." And I think of that when I think about how we kill things. We make them extinct by slapping labels on them and believing those labels and making them harder and harder and harder. And we just do this all the time. And when you sit zazen, you have the opportunity to have the gesture be an open hand. Uchiyama says opening the hand of thought, and what he means by that is the title of one of his books. He means that we're so often we have a thought, and then we grab onto it. And can it, the gesture instead be an open hand? Can a thought be just a thought? It's no thing. So zazen is good for nothing. And it really is good for it. We thingify all the time. And to some extent we have to, as I say, because we have to communicate with each other. But we don't have to believe it so hard. And the third kind of way I want to talk about it is another favorite of mine. Years, you know, Suzuki Roshi started the San Francisco Zen Center, and his son, Hoitsu, has sort of inherited us. And so when there is a mountain seat, when an abbot gets installed, Hoitsu comes and helps to organize the ceremony and all, and then he has a special role, and he plays Manjushri. And I don't know if you've seen this. You know, there's one at Green Gulch, there's one at City Center, there's one at Berkeley, and blah, blah. Anyway, it's just like a wooden pillar, about that high, I think. And then there's a wooden... a piece of wood, shaped wood, on top of it. And so you take the little altar cloth off of it, and then he takes it and he goes boom, 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 and then he says some words which I've probably been told them, but I don't remember exactly, but it's in Japanese, and he basically is saying, I am Manjushri, I am the Bodhisattva of wisdom, and he's sort of opening the ceremony, and then at the end he does the same and he closes it. And he used to come to Tassajara occasionally when I was living there, and he would lecture occasionally, and his English was not ever great, but it was not so bad then, and there was a gap. Well, he went off to Eheiji, to Suzuki Roshi's home. That's the main monastery. He went there, and he was the head of practice there for a number of years, and then he was promoted, I guess. He was called the Godo, and he was responsible for training the monks. So he didn't use his English very much, and now it's difficult, I think, for him to speak English. But at any rate, back then he could. And he gave a Dharma talk at Tassajara that I'll never forget. He said, he was talking about Zazen, and he said, Zazen is how to do, how to do, how to do. And it's a wonderful image and a wonderful, it's a really simple teaching. Mel used to say, every time I sit down, I give myself Zazen instruction. Give myself Zazen instruction. And as I tell myself to sit up straight, I notice how is my mudra kind of, is it kind of round or is it collapsed? Is my chin sticking out? Whatever. And Hoetsu was saying that that's Zazen. In other words, he does that the whole time. Just paying attention. So Zazen is how to do, how to do, how to do. Mel also used to say that the important question is how, not why. Like Reb doesn't answer why questions, so it's probably a similar thing. But Mel says the question is how. So how to do, how to do, how to do that. We keep letting go of the thoughts that whatever we're grasping onto, come back. Come back to your breath and your posture. How to do? Am I sitting up straight? Did my chin fall forward? Is my chin sticking out? Am I paying attention to the curve in my lower back? Whatever. Just asking yourself, how to do, how to do, how to do. It's a really useful mantra. And finally, what if it isn't perfect? What if it isn't working? Then what do you do? I could give a whole lecture. That's Zazen. When it's not working. Because those times when it's really easy, there's no effort. I actually had some time at Tassajara. One practice period. I was there for 8. I think it was one that, maybe it was more, but it was just, I longed to go to the Zendo, and every period was just like the page, like, whoosh, all day, every day. That was pretty neat. And then I learned how to practice with wanting it back. And I knew I was being ridiculous, and I knew that you don't have that kind of control. So I had to practice with that. But mostly, it's not perfect. I certainly had other times when a period went relatively quickly, I guess, and there was calm and there was settledness and so on. But not quite like that. And there were others that weren't calm and settled at all. a monastery, one of the things it is a pressure cooker. And it's not so calm. So what if it isn't perfect? What if I never get there? What if I don't get a good, quiet period of zazen? I think that's major, forgive me, practice opportunity. Because always, we're all human beings. We're all sort of garden variety neurotic jerks. And, you know, we do get angry. We do get our buttons pushed, particularly during sesshin. There are sesshin romances that they talk about sometimes. People develop a crush on somebody who's sitting like way across the big wide zendo from them, but they fall in love with this person. I never had that experience, but I completely believe it. But also, you know, you can develop really a hatred for somebody who puts their finger in the pot when they're serving. I mean, this becomes... I see people who've lived at Tassar nodding their heads. So it's easy for those kinds of things to happen, or some other thing is happening in your life. So how to do? You know, you can't just say to yourself, "Let it go." Well, you can. But it's not going to do you much good, most likely. You probably just make it worse if you start, you know, beating yourself up about it. You definitely don't beat yourself up about it. Don't do that. Sometimes our job, I guess, is... You know, shikantaza is just sitting, and sometimes it's just sitting with a really tight jaw and anger or giddiness or pain. You shouldn't, if you're sitting and you have kind of pain and you know you're hurting yourself, please move. But there's a lot of pain that's actually the kind my friend Barbara used to have and then didn't for one sesshin, the resistance pain. And you can sit through that. And you have to know that. And when you're starting out, err on the side of moving. I don't want to hear anybody saying, I developed sciatica because Mary said don't move. No. You have to get to know it and work with it. But there's a kind of pain that is simply resistance pain. And often, it's better to just sit through it. You have to know that, figure that out for yourself, or maybe with a teacher. Okay, so I'm not saying this lightly, but sitting still is really important. But whatever these difficulties are that come up, that make your zazen not perfect, that's just how it is. So don't make it worse. Don't take it from nothing to something. Or if you do make it to something, notice that. And if you want to say excuse me, say excuse me. Or just come back. Because when you notice that you've been thinking or obsessing or whatever, when you notice it, you're already present again. You don't have to do anything. You do not have to talk to yourself about it. You're already present again. Just go back to your breath and your body. And I know that's easy to say. And I know it's sometimes hard to do. And it's doable. And that's our practice. We practice that. We practice that. And that practice of letting go is enlightenment. Dogen said so. So do you have any questions or comments or experiences of your own to share?
Thank you very much. How do you know when you're returning to the present that you're not pushing away the thought? Like, how do you know that you're just letting it go and not pushing it away? Like, what's the balance of that?
I think as you keep doing it, you're paying attention. You know, and you know if and if this time you don't know, and you push it away, it's going to come back. So you don't have to worry about that. I do think you learn your body and mind in a way that's another definition of zazen, learning your body and mind. And sometimes the letting go, I guess it feels like pushing something away. You know, I mean, sometimes letting go takes a real effort. But it's not the same as repressing. And that the repressing is not useful. So I just think you learn it as you do it. So just sit zazen.
Wow, there's a lot of stuff in that talk there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for talking about Hoetsu and striking the... Now I understand case one of Book of Serenity. Manjushri hits the gavel. I never understood that part before. My zazen is better now, I think, in a way, than it used to be, because I'm more aware of how deeply enthralled I am to my karma. And so when I realize again and again, oh, I'm lost in the ozone, this is a dead parrot, I'm kind of grateful because I need the training. I really need the opportunity. So, here's another, chance to push away, embrace, open.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, thank you for this really clear teaching.
You're welcome. Better is a dangerous word, but I think it does get easier or better or something. And again, it gets harder and then it gets better again. It's
more opportunity.
Yes. Yeah.
I thank you for your teaching. You know, I'm glad you mentioned resistance. I've moved on to other kinds of resistance, but the first one that I experienced was falling asleep. And like I didn't know that was resistance until my teacher said, "Oh, that's just resistance." And then it went away.
Yeah.
When I realized that it was resistance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just kind of wonder if all this flitting about is that's just resistance too, isn't it?
Can be. Certainly can be. You mean mind flitting about?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, Blanche used to tell a story that she developed a habit of coughing a lot in the zendo, and so it got so bad, she was coughing so hard she would leave the zendo because she thought she was bothering people. And then Dick Baker said to her, "Why don't you just stay in the zendo?" So she did, and she stopped coughing.
Real quick, so I've been thinking on a story, and it happened at Clearwater, and it was a full day sit, I think probably around 2019 or 2018, and I think our full day sits, the one day sits, do we start at 6 o'clock or 6:30? They generally went until about 8:30.
Yeah,
so anyway, it was one of those days, and I had a great day. I think it was in the winter time sometime, and there was a fellow there that I had never seen before and had never seen since, and somehow he found himself to be the timekeeper at the next to the last sit, and I don't know where you were at the particular time, but I remember Liam was in the room and kind of leading it at that point, and when you sit for a while, of course, you get these minutes into your bones, and you have a sense of when the session ends.
Sometimes. You just hate the dawn because you're sure that they fell asleep.
Well, and on this particular night, and so we sat for 40-minute stretches at Clearwater typically, and so this particular night, I knew that the new timekeeper had missed the 40 minutes, and then I knew we were heading into 42, 43, and I started to hurt so bad, and my head was spinning out of control. And I knew Liam had to know this too. And finally, Liam got up, and he reminded the timekeeper, you know, your past time. And ding! And so we all get up, and I looked at my clock, and it's like, 6 minutes! We just sat for 46 minutes! And then Liam gently, you know, to make the guy feel good, he said, it's okay, we'll just cut some time off on our kin hen. And I thought I was just going to explode.
Kenyon is walking meditation that you do between periods.
But anyway, I just, you know, had to do what I had to do, and I let go, and it was an okay last sit. But I remember that the three refuges in Pali were never so sweet as they were that night.
Oh, yes. I think Rose had her hand up.
You said that people don't like why questions, but sometimes people come to meditation instruction or why do Zazen? What could you say to someone?
It depends. I mean, I could well say, just do it and find out. But depend on the person. I mean, because that's a kind of a Zen snotty answer. But I think, I mean, I would say that probably, but more gently, that there isn't something to be gotten out of it. And if you stop trying to get something, then you'll discover the joy of it. But you can't count on that, you know. My friend Maylee used to say there's bliss there, which is true, but that's not all. And I have periods still. I have periods that, you know, that I do. I'm sure that the timekeeper fell asleep and they didn't. That happens, but it's pretty rare, actually. But there are just times when I don't want to. Okay, but I think it's a major... Oh, I don't want to say that that way. It's part of maturing in practice to let go of wanting to get something. Like the woman I talked about at the beginning, Kate, who thought that she could do 3 months and get enlightened. And then her life was going to be ever so much easier and everything was going to be perfect. And, oh well. Is that useful? I don't mean to be unkind.
Yeah, it gives me a different perspective. I'm going to stop talking.
Okay, you have a rock suit, so you're obviously not new to this.
Thank you, Mary. I am new to Zazen sitting, And when I first started sitting, I would say to my husband after the sit, what would they do if I just went crazy and like jumped up? And he's like, nothing. And it was a real struggle for me just to like, okay. And so then I had moments of falling asleep, mm-hmm. and like almost coming out of the chair, and then moments of pain where I didn't want to do it, but I came and I did it, and I did it. And I kind of feel like I'm one of those people that just like hammer over the head, and a forgetter. But, you know, when I'm invited to sit zazen, I'm like, why not? Like, what else do I have to do? I mean, there's so many things that I'm learning about it that this seems to be the best I could do.
Well,
so thank you.
Sure. Find out. This young man here. Well, did you have a question that you wanted? No. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I lied. I told Jim I was going to try to end around 8:45.
Thank you for the talk, Mary. I'm wondering your perspective on zazen. Is there always an element or elements of, well, I'm doing that wrong, but maybe that means I'm doing it right? Like, I just spent 30 minutes, you know, my mind racing about work when, you know, I should be here, but I was aware that it was racing. So is that kind of always?
That's common. I think, you know, I hope that, you know, when that's happening, that you also, you know, you say to yourself, you know, you just take a breath, maybe exhale completely and let it go and come back to your breath and your body. And then a millisecond later, you're off again. And those are not pleasant periods of zazen. However, they happen. And you just keep doing it and keep letting go and keep letting go and keep letting go. I sat a 3-day sesshin with Joko Beck once, she of Every Day Zen. And I just didn't want to. And they had this thing where they had like a tea the night before. Maybe you sat one period or something, but I remember being at this tea, and it was just sort of an informal thing where people were hanging around in the kitchen or something. And I remember I kept saying, I don't want to do this. I do not want to sit. I don't want to do it. And it was a really hard 3 days. I had a lot of pain. I cried a lot. And usually in a sesshin, my experience was then and still is that I, at some point I settle and it gets easier. Never settled. Never. And it never got easier. It doesn't always stay easy. Learned that the hard way. But at any rate, I didn't. And then it ended, which was really sweet. But it ended, and I was, for the next few days, I was really settled. Not during the sesshin, but something happened. You know, something happened. So you do it, and you do it, and you sort of see what happens. So, welcome to the club. Okay.